Hello, welcome to the show called The Environment. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with SunSounds of Arizona. I'll be reading an article today from the Sierra Magazine, the Winter 2023 edition. This article is entitled Death Rattle. Death Rattle. The subtitle is While Clean Energy Markets Soar, Historically Coal-Dependent States Cling to the Fossil Fuel at the Expense of Ratepayers and Reliability. This article was written by Austin Gaffney. Last February, Kentucky State Senator Robbie Mills sat at a long mahogany table during a meeting of the Natural Resources and Energy Committee. His blue pinstripe suit pressed against the state seal imprinted on his chair, two white men, one in buckskin and one in a suit, clasping hands. Now, Mills is a dry cleaner from western Kentucky. He was elected to the state legislature in 2016. Decades earlier, he had graduated from Oral Roberts University, a Christian evangelical school in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he had brought those conservative beliefs, especially on climate, with him into public office. For months, Mills, who did not respond to repeated interview requests, had shared Twitter post by Alex Epstein, author of Fossil Future, a book claiming human flourishing requires the use of more fossil fuels. So days before the meeting, Mills had bragged online about the 300 years worth of coal under our feet. And now, gray hair flattened cleanly along his temples, Mills tidied his notes and looked up through clear plastic frames, facing a committee largely friendly to his sponsored legislation, Senate Bill 4. It would make it harder for Kentucky utilities to shut down their old and expensive coal plants. The bill would require electricity providers to go through a complex, time-consuming series of hearings to get permission from state regulators to close fossil fuel generators. In a direct attack on the Inflation Reduction Act, which created $380 billion in federal support for clean energy programs, the bill also required utilities to demonstrate that any proposed coal plant closures weren't the result of federal incentives. As recently as a decade ago, corporate interest likely would have endorsed Mills' bills. But in February, some of the state's biggest utilities arrived at Kentucky's capital in opposition to the idea. Just 2 months earlier, Louisville Gas and Electric and Kentucky Utilities, that's LG&E/KU, they had proposed retiring 4 coal-burning units, a move that the utility said would save customers $600 million. During the hearing, Kent Blake, who is vice president of Kentucky Utilities, begged lawmakers to stand down on all energy legislation and asked them to form a stakeholder group that could address affordability and reliability in the long term. He insisted that the federal tax credits for coal retirements could only lead to benefits for ratepayers. Keeping coal units open, he said, would result in, quote, higher rates that put existing industry and economic development in the state at risk, unquote. Well, sitting beside Blake, Rocco D'Ascenso is the deputy counsel for Duke Energy Kentucky. He warned lawmakers that the proposed legislation would force Duke's Northern Kentucky customers to underwrite in perpetuity the East Bend Station. That's a 648-megawatt single-unit generator built in 1981 near the tiny town of Rabbit Hash. In short, customers would pay for the operation and maintenance of a plant no longer producing any energy. D'Ascenso said, quote, if this bill passes, we would not be able to close a fossil fuel plant. That isn't hyperbole, unquote. Well, Mills was unmoved by the arguments from the state's energy providers. Mills insisted and said, Senate Bill 4 is designed to ring the bell in Kentucky, and hopefully the nation, and to serve as our initial action to address the coming reliability crisis in electric generation. Unquote. He went on and said that burning fossil fuels was the only way, quote, grandma and grandpa can know their medical device has power and they can stay warm, unquote. Passing the bill, he continued, would make sure Kentuckians, quote, didn't end up with issues that happened over Christmas, unquote. Well, he was referring to Winter Storm Elliott, a polar vortex that swelled over the eastern half of the United States like a giant purple bruise the previous holiday season. On that night of December 23rd of 2022, temperatures in Kentucky plummeted from 45 degrees to 5 degrees Fahrenheit. High winds arrived in lockstep, whipping freezing rain across the state. To save the electrical grid from total collapse, the Tennessee Valley Authority and Kentucky Utilities instituted the first rolling blackouts in each of their histories. A subsequent report by the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis found that more than 100,000 megawatts of coal and gas generation failed to start or went offline during the storm. In comparison, generation of energy from renewables like wind or solar met or exceeded expectations of reliability. State Representative Al Gentry, a fourth-term Democrat and a hydrologist from Louisville, expressed frustration at the Senate Bill 4 hearing over the lack of discussion about the increasing pattern of extreme weather events in the Commonwealth. Winter Storm Elliott was just one event in a growing list of climate change intensified disasters. Other freak events included the F4 tornadoes in West Kentucky in 2021 and 2022, the historic floods in East Kentucky that combined killed 125 Kentuckians. Gentry warned his colleagues that Kentucky's climate was changing. He said, "We're dealing with things we haven't dealt with ever," unquote. Gentry was also concerned that keeping coal plants open would exacerbate the public health issues that had plagued his community for decades. He grew up in a poor corner of southwest Louisville, bookended by a pair of coal plants. Cane Run, which transitioned to methane gas in 2015, and Mill Creek. Gentry remembers that when he was a child, black soot from coal emissions had piled in layers beside houses and on top of cars. He told me during a phone call, quote, "If you could imagine always having to clean that off, you can imagine what lined your lungs. We had a shorter life expectancy. We had high respiratory issues and cancers. The Clean Air Act was a good thing," unquote. Well, historically, the price for keeping unprofitable coal plants open has been paid in the impacts to public health. A Sierra Club study released in early 2023 showed that Jefferson County, which encompasses Louisville, had the third highest rate of premature deaths from coal plant pollution in the United States. Asthma-induced hospital visits in Louisville have declined after coal plant retirements and environmental upgrades, according to a Columbia University study. A trio of Kentucky power plants were responsible for 315 of the nation's 6,700 premature deaths related to coal-fired electricity generation. Senate Bill 4 would likely result in two of those plants, Mill Creek and Ghent, continuing to spew greenhouse gas emissions and dangerous particulate matter past their initial retirement dates. Well, after Mills formally filed his bill, opposition to his idea kept growing. In March, the Kentucky Association of Manufacturers, which partners with major employers like Brown-Forman, the distiller of Jack Daniel's, and the Chemours Company, which is the maker of products like Teflon, they issued a letter opposing the proposal. The association said Senate Bill 4 would fail to improve our state's energy security, reliability, or resiliency. Instead, the bill would likely, quote, increase cost for manufacturers, other businesses, and Kentucky consumers, unquote. Well, despite the pushback from utilities and public health researchers and industry, Republicans remained steadfast in their support of Mills' proposal. Jim Gooch, chair of the House Natural Resources and Energy Committee, conceded during a subsequent public meeting that customers, quote, might be required to pay a little more for reliability, but I think that might be very well spent to make sure that when our citizens flip that light switch, those lights are on, unquote. Most state lawmakers remained married to the myth that coal plant closures, rather than a lack of investment in renewable replacements, had resulted in an unreliable energy grid. Gooch said this, quote, "Nothing you can say is going to convince us otherwise," unquote. A decade ago, when coal accounted for roughly 40% of the nation's electricity generation, Michael Bloomberg, the former New York City mayor and environmental philanthropist, famously called coal a dead man walking. The observation was right. Today, coal supplies less than 20% of U.S. electricity, and its share of the energy market is shrinking. The United States is on track to close half of its remaining coal facilities by 2026. Now, there are many forces behind the demise of coal's 150-year-long dynasty. More than a century of mining means that coal seams are thinning, making extraction more expensive. Grassroots efforts like the Beyond Coal campaign have succeeded in shutting down hundreds of coal plants nationwide. The Paris Agreement and the Inflation Reduction Act have accelerated the market forces now focused on the clean energy transition. Only one U.S. coal plant, that's Dry Fork in Wyoming, remains cost competitive with renewables. Last year in the United States, generation from renewables surpassed that from coal and nuclear. For people worried about the climate crisis and public health, coal's collapse is demonstrably good news. But it's bad news for the coal industry, which is why fossil fuel proponents, abetted by coal-friendly legislatures, are doing everything they can to keep coal afloat. The strategy is not smart governance. It's not necessarily even smart politics. Utilities and energy experts agree that keeping coal-fired power plants open endangers the public, increases emissions, and keeps us locked into a more volatile and costlier grid. Aaron Overturf is a managing attorney at Earth Justice. Aaron said, "Slowing down the transition in certain states is going to lead to higher cost and increased levels of greenhouse gas pollution. It could also result in, quote, worse health outcomes for communities around those plants and an increased accumulation of toxic waste like coal ash, which has the potential to contaminate our water and impact our health long after a power plant has stopped generating electricity," unquote. And yet some Republican legislatures are bluntly prioritizing coal interest over those of the ratepayers who elevated them to office. Wyoming was the first state to pass a law making it more difficult to close coal plants. In 2019, lawmakers began requiring electric utilities to request approval from state regulators to retire a plant. North Dakota followed suit in 2021 with a unanimous vote in both houses. In 2023, Kentucky, Indiana, Utah, and West Virginia all passed copycat legislation. The marionette strings of the coal industry counteroffensive can be traced back to the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's an Austin-based conservative think tank that has received at least $4 million from fossil fuel interest like the Koch brothers. Now, the foundation told Sierra that while it's public knowledge that entities related to the Koch family have made donations, the organization's nonprofit status means it does not disclose specific gifts or donors. The pro-coal legislation was pushed by Michael J. Nassi, N-A-S-I, a partner with the Texas-based law firm Jackson Walker LLP, and a senior fellow with the Project Life Powered, which is a Texas public policy foundation initiative to raise America's energy IQ. Well, for the better part of a decade, Nassi has crisscrossed the country to expose what he called an anti-fossil fuel ideology during congressional testimony in June. In Wyoming, he represented front groups for the continued purchase of state coal. In Indiana, he testified that coal plays a critical role in the nation's electrical grid. And in 2018, he told Kentucky's Natural Resources and Energy Committee that coal made up almost three-quarters of the total energy needed for a functioning grid. Brent Bennett, policy director of Life Powered, told Sierra in an email, quote, the effort to rapidly eliminate fossil fuels is largely based on ideology and is not consistent with sound science or with policies that promote maximum human flourishing, unquote. In a separate email, Nassi said he's been invited to hearings and regulatory proceedings to share concerns that, quote, far too many advocates in the energy policy debate appear to be advocating for the elimination of the use of fossil fuels in a manner that is too often factually untethered to the stated goal of improving human health and the environment, unquote. Nassi then added that it's, quote, not sustainable to continue to retire thermal generation assets and replace them with weather-dependent resources, unquote, like solar and wind. But energy market observers say that the arguments being made in favor of propping up coal are outdated and ill-considered. Sean O'Leary, senior researcher with the Ohio River Valley Institute, which is an Appalachian think tank focused on energy and economic issues, said, coal has gone beyond being an economic issue to becoming an identity issue in part of the culture wars. He said the attractiveness of low-cost renewables is causing political fissures in states that had once been solidly in support of coal and in opposition to any resource that might threaten coal. The energy transition is happening, he said, because of raw economics. In Wyoming, for example, wind generation more than doubled in the past 4 years, and in 2021 accounted for almost a fifth of the state's electricity generation. O'Leary said the simple fact is that wind and solar generation in many places are significantly less expensive, not just from coal, but from natural gas. It's why Texas, which is a fossil fuel state if there ever was one, now produces more renewable energy than any other state in the nation, unquote. The pro-fossil fuel campaign, driven by the Texas Public Policy Foundation and others, presents problems for coal state lawmakers who are trying to bring attention to the main culprit in extreme weather events, climate change fueled by carbon pollution, and prioritize a safest and most cost-effective solution, which is transitioning from coal generation to clean energy. In the process, fossil fuel ideologues have transformed a dead man walking into a zombie that has proved very difficult to kill. No state has been more determined to keep coal on a taxpayer-funded lifeline than Wyoming. The cowboy state has led the nation's coal production since the 1980s. As recently as 2020, it mined two-fifths of this country's coal. Just behind Texas in net energy production, Wyoming produces 13 times more energy than the rural state uses, and earns the majority of state income from exporting the surplus. But Wyoming's coal economy is not immune from the vast changes that are underway. In 2019, Wyoming's largest utility, PacifiCorp, which delivers electricity to six western states, issued a report stating that 60% of its coal plants were uneconomic. So the state legislators swooped in. During the 2019 legislative session, the Republican supermajority passed Senate Bill 159, which forced utilities wishing to speed up a coal unit's retirement to first try to sell the facility. During the first 4 years, Wyoming lawmakers have passed a slate, during the past 4 years, Wyoming lawmakers have passed a slate of additional bills seeking to prop up coal. The measures include limiting a utility's cost recovery after retiring a coal plant, forcing regulators to consider grid reliability before approving a retirement, creating a $1.2 million fund for the governor to sue other states if they opt to power themselves with clean energy rather than purchase Wyoming's lignite coal, and establishing the nation's first carbon capture portfolio standards. Now, many of these laws seem little more than performative politics. So far, their real-life impacts have been negligible. No lawsuit has been filed by the governor against other states, according to Shannon Anderson, who's an attorney and organizer for Powder River Basin Resource Council. That's a nonprofit working to protect Wyoming residents against the impacts of fossil fuels. A pair of studies showed that retrofit cost to install carbon capture technology would be uneconomical. They project up to $1 billion per unit. Anderson said, quote, "It's incredibly unlikely that carbon capture technology will happen in Wyoming. The surest way to close a coal plant is to make carbon capture required, because it's going to make it more expensive," unquote. And then she added that there's a growing realization that, quote, "it is frankly just too late to save coal," unquote. Meanwhile, West Virginia legislators were engaged in a similar effort to rescue coal as they tried to save the Pleasants Power Station. That 1,300-megawatt coal plant, with three smokestacks and two enormous cooling towers, rises above the Ohio River in Pleasants County on the state's far western edge. The behemoth started burning coal in 1979, and 40 years later, the plant was struggling to remain profitable. In 2019, lawmakers called a special session and issued the plant's then-owner, First Energy, a $12.5 million tax break in order to keep it running. So while First Energy was wrangling funds for fossil fuel plants in West Virginia, the company was filling the pockets of lawmakers in Ohio. In 2020, federal investigators revealed that First Energy had given some $61 million in bribes to Ohio's former House Speaker and Republican Party Chair for a $1 billion bailout of two nuclear plants. Last March, a federal jury convicted both men of racketeering. While the bailout was overturned, the legislation that sought to protect nuclear energy also included subsidies for two Eisenhower-era coal plants. Those subsidies remain on the books, and they continue to cost Ohio ratepayers $150 million annually. Well, after the scandal broke, First Energy declared bankruptcy, tried to revamp its image, changing its name to Energy Harbor. The makeover included a promise to become a net-zero carbon emitter. Last spring, the company announced the retirement of two of its coal plants, West Virginia's Pleasants and Ohio's W.H. Sammis. Jim Justice, West Virginia's Republican governor and a coal baron worth over $500 million, did not want to see Pleasants close. So, at a press conference in February, Justice said he would do, quote, "anything he can possibly do," unquote, to keep Pleasance running as a coal-fired power plant for many, many, many years to come. In his pleas, Justice highlighted job losses because the plant is the county's largest employer and taxpayer. The Ohio River Valley Institute's O'Leary said the perception that coal is central to West Virginia job growth and economic survival is, quote, statistically pure nonsense, unquote. Back when coal was the nation's top energy source, political fealty to coal made more sense. 1 in 10 West Virginians worked in the industry. But once mining became automated and methane gas became competitive, jobs dwindled. Today, only 11,000 state residents work in coal. That represents a 90% decline from the industry's zenith. O'Leary said the only thing not underestimated about coal is its cultural significance. O'Leary grew up in West Virginia, where he listened to choirs on the radio singing, "Coal is West Virginia." At West Virginia University, football players still run onto the field past a lump of coal that they rub for good luck before each game. Well, Governor Justice's arguments may not be accurate, but they are culturally relevant, and they're backed by the Utility Regulating Public Service Commission that he appointed. Unfortunately, we can't go on with the article because we've run out of time, and I've got another couple pages to read. So I'm going to have to say goodbye. We will get to this and we will finish up this article the next time we get together. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I have been reading the article, Death Rattle, and it comes from the Sierra Magazine, the Winter 2023 edition. Hope you have a great week ahead, and I hope you keep on listening. Bye-bye.